everybody. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. This week on Indirect Democracy, I'll be taking a look at the no-fly list, its purpose, and its dangers. Plus, there will be a global warming update, the President's Horoscope, a new sponsor, and the What a Weenie Award. Well, welcome back. Podcast number 13 of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I am your host. My name is David. Steve, welcome, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody. The holiday season is now upon us, and this is being actually recorded after the big holidays, so feeling a little stuffed, but glad to be with you. See, I know that everybody's probably, if we're being direct about which day this is being recorded on Friday the 24th, and I'm pretty sure everyone is out there shopping for their big Christmas items. Myself trying to avoid the big Christmas rush today, but I did notice something a little bit interesting while watching commercials on TV. Getting a little bit of my TV watching in as I can, was noticing that the new ad for the PlayStation Portable for, I think it's Sonic the Hedgehog, was kind of cracking up that their new catch line was, stay fast, stay hard, and go home. Which, I'm not sure if it's there is the new ad, or if it's the government that's actually focusing on having an ad which is similar, which is, go long, go strong, go home. I don't know which one came first, but they're both kind of funny. And I hope it's not our government matching up with the video games, because the various levels of how that could be implied are very strange and very sad. Well, there is a lot to talk about this week, but as always, this podcast always begins with the global warming update. About a couple months ago, I mentioned a story involving a lawsuit that would force the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, to recognize CO2 emissions as an air pollutant that may reasonably be anticipated to endanger health or welfare, and, as such, force them to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from new cars and trucks. The case is scheduled to be heard on November 29th and is entitled Massachusetts vs. EPA, case number or docket number 05-1120. As promised, when the case is heard, I will report to you the arguments heard in the case that won't be decided until July of 2007. But as the case gets ready for its date in our Supreme Court, Nobel laureates have been writing to President Bush to act on global warming. In a story by Greg Storr for Bloomberg.com, he writes that while the administration doesn't deny that global warming is occurring, it is addressing the issue through non-regulatory means including tax incentives, voluntary partnerships, and research into alternative fuels. This statement was accompanied by an EPA finding that there is, quote, substantial scientific uncertainty about the effects of climate change and the most efficient means to deal with it. And that would be the end quote from that. This finding by the EPA naturally changed with the new administration, but it is telling to hear the two opinions of the same administration. Yes, according to the White House, global warming is happening, but according to the EPA, we're not certain of why or how or what to do. So I'm partly waiting for the day when someone says, no, one could anticipate the loss of the Arctic ice caps. I mean, they can't seem to anticipate anything else, so I won't be surprised if that's their argument. But this administration's stance is based on two arguments. One, that the states lack any standing to argue this case. So if you're not familiar with the concept of standing means you have suffered or are likely to suffer an injury by a law going into effect or the acts of another and can recover some award of damages or a remedy from the court to basically cover for that injury. Obviously, the effects of global warming are not sufficient enough injury for this administration, who in part two of their argument claimed that the scientific studies show the effects are uncertain. But, according to the same article, the 18 climate scientists supporting the case for the states, including two Nobel laureates, criticized the EPA for citing the studies of the National Academy of Sciences. Scientists who served on the report cited by the EPA have come out calling the evidence for global warming as compelling, and there is no doubt as to its effects and causes. As always, I'll keep you updated as to what will occur with the case. What I found fascinating from this article is, did you know there is a CO2 litigation group Damn. You know, I know everyone deserves their day in court, but CO2 emitters as a group? That's good. I also got to engage in a great discussion this past week on the Progressive Podcast Network on their forum site, and I do apologize, I forgot to mention. Indirect Democracy is affiliated with the Progressive Podcast Network, and I am a proud member of that network. So I do encourage you to go down to the forum website, progressivepodcastnetwork.org/forums, or newmediarevolutionaries.com, and got into a great discussion about global warming and environmental stances, because there was a story regarding polluting more to help to help global warming, which I thought was just sad and pathetic. But it was great to be part of that message board, because it was just basically talking about taking those 5 minutes a day, doing those little things, leading by example. And I was partly inspired this past week by the TV show, if you watch it, My Name is Earl, whose main character, Earl, learned all about global warming and tried as hard as possible himself to fight it, which was a very, you know, hard thing for him to do, because it was just himself trying to stop everybody from polluting, which is, you know, next to impossible. In the end, he was told by a character to basically take, you know, make an effort every day for 5 minutes to change how you live. And that's really a great message, which we're trying to get across, is just taking those 5 minutes every day, or even longer, to make changes to the way we live to help reduce the amount of CO2 emissions. Along with that TV show, there are now more media efforts being put out, so like the movie Happy Feet, which apparently deals with global warming. Have not seen it, but have heard that that is part of its main message. Of course, An Inconvenient Truth comes out on DVD, came out on DVD this past week. So it's good that our media is being helpful to spread the word, but once again, here are some things that you can do. First, spread the message. If you can, purchase An Inconvenient Truth for your friends and family for the holiday season. And no, I don't work for Al Gore, so in case you're thinking about that. Or buy it and hold a house party and show it to your friends. Convince your friends to make that 5 minute a day change. There are things that we can do. And then lead by example. Buy energy efficient light bulbs. Plant trees. Recycle. Take more public transportation. I encourage you to listen to My Green Promise, which is a podcast found through the Progressive Podcast Network. But make a real effort. Acting locally can spread to others, and together, hopefully, we can make a real difference. I think we've had enough about global warming for this week. So here is an ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
Tired of falling asleep during NPR? Bored of uptight news anchors? The Unham Press Corps might be just for you. From politics to pop culture, this weekly podcast is sure to please even the crankiest liberal. Go to www.unimpresscore.com or the iTunes Music Store and subscribe now. The Unham Press Corps may contain language not suitable for children.
Okay, we're back, and it's time to give out the President Horoscope. Now, as I mention every week, I like to be a little bit helpful and guide him along his way by giving him his horoscope. I figure what can be better than turning to the stars to find maybe some more of his answers that he needs. And as our president is a Cancer, in the astrological sense, you know what I mean. Okay, here is his astrological horoscope. It's actually going to be a little bit old, but it is for the week of November 19th. Who knows? This will be late. From the pages of Elle magazine, his career meter reading is an 8, so it dropped a point. November 20th through the 26th. Creative sales and promotional work look productive and successful this week. You instinctively know who to contact and who to work with. Baker Group. Baker Group. You also feel a burning desire to expand and go global. If you haven't already, it's not too late to push your product or service into a larger arena. In fact, now is the perfect time to use a multi-pronged approach to cover every base and pick up every receptive new client or customer. Which is all he can do, because I think his approval rating is at 31%. Be positive, Cancer. You know you have something incredible to offer, and the public should be very friendly this week. That's the Christmas spirit and the turkey. A new advertising campaign that utilizes humor and a slightly quirky approach can also work miracles. This week's touchstones are emerald and garnet. Wonder what would be a good advertising campaign that would be quirky and humorous for the president. I'm going to guess that those pajamas he wore in Vietnam are good enough for me. But let's see. Let's get on to the next thing. This past week, I was actually thinking about something that this goes into. Before I get into the subject of the no-fly list, I was reminded of a quote I made a couple of weeks ago. I quoted the American president saying that you don't fight the fights you think you can win. You fight the fights that need fighting. And I thought about this intently for the past week because of my argument against the case for impeachment, which I realized that despite mentioning there is much we have to do to help the average American, of which, of course, we all seem to proudly hail, and I mean average in the middle-class sense, it may have come across as though I didn't want to pursue impeachment because there was no way to win it and it was not worth it. And I realized that my language did come across with that, and it was not what I was meaning to intone, and to that I do apologize. It's not that I don't think that fighting for justice is not worth fighting for. That wasn't my intention at all, and if it came across that way, and I feel that in some ways it may have, it wasn't what I meant to do. I believe that holding this president accountable is a fight that needs fighting. And we can do so by hearings into the contractors that are in Iraq trying to rebuild, that we've hired to rebuild. See, money is being lost and wasted by this administration, and all of these policies have hurt the average American and lulled us all into a false belief of safety and a strong economy based on borrowed spending that is all too reminiscent of the time before the 1987 stock crash. You know, but I'm no stock analyst. I just remember those times and know what it could mean and does mean to us as average taxpayers. Average Americans need the help of a government that will stop tax cuts to businesses shipping jobs overseas, will give fair tax cuts or end the tax cuts that have saddled the debt of our generation onto our children's children. And in that, we are being taxed twice. One, to pay back the money borrowed, and then a second time on the interest. It's not that I don't want to fight for justice or to hold this president accountable. We have to. But I want us to fight for people whose unemployment is about to run out. I want us to fight for mothers who can't get money from deadbeat dads because the government won't fund enforcing child support laws. I want us to fight to give parents tax credit for college tuition. I want us to fight for elderly people who should never have to choose between their medication and food. Every problem you can think of should be our focus to help each other out. I believe that that is a fight that deserves greater attention. These are the fights that need fighting. And if we had all the time in the world and everything was cured, then yes, holding the president accountable for acts which may be impeachable should be brought up. But average Americans need our help, and that, I believe, is the fight that needs fighting. So before I begin the section on the no-fly list, I want to introduce you to a piece of music by Bob Mouse. It is called Bury the Hatchet. It's from the album Borders, and I thought it would be a good intro to get into the topic of the no-fly list. I found this song this week by him, and I wanted to thank him personally for allowing the use of his song. I will, of course, give at the end, play the song one more time before the podcast is over, and give you all the links, which, of course, will be up at the homepage for Indirect Democracy if you would like to contact him, or download the song, and, of course, if you want to contact him, to purchase the entire album of Borders. But this week's topic does focus on the famous or now infamous no-fly list. Since the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, the government's no-fly list has grown in size, yet it has also grown as a threat to the civil liberties of Americans nationwide. So, what is it? How did it get started? What's it meant to do? Where is it going wrong? And of course, what can be done if you're on the list? Those are a lot of questions, and we're going to try to answer them together. The no-fly list as we know it did not really get started until 1990. At the time, it was a list of names that the government listed as people it considered a direct threat to civil aviation. Up until September 11th, that list of people totaled a whopping 16 people. That's 1-6. 16 people. The list was maintained by the FBI. After 9/11, of course, the government made it a high priority to update that list. Starting in November of 2001, the Transportation Safety Administration, or TSA, in affiliation with the Federal Aviation Administration, took full control of the government's watch list. According to the government's own information, quote, "The TSA prepares and maintains a watch list of persons who are known to pose or are suspected of posing a threat to civil aviation or national security. These watch lists are compiled from information provided by federal intelligence and law enforcement agencies. Inclusion on the no-fly list involves a prohibition from traveling by commercial aviation." So, by December of 2001, the list grew to 594 names. In 2002, the TSA became part of the new Department of Homeland Security, and by October of 2002, after initially reporting that there was not a no-fly list, they admitted to the existence of such a list, which had grown to over 1,000 names. As of March of 2006, that list had grown to over 44,000 people. What is not told of this list is that in reality, there are two lists. One, the actual no-fly list that includes the 44,000 plus people mentioned. And the second is even more startling. It is a list called the selectee list of people who should be pulled aside for additional security screening. The people who are on this list have an S or a series of S's or initials placed on their ticket to verify this categorization. The amount of people that are on this list totals over 75,000 people, according to a 60 Minutes report this past October. Just so you understand the mathematics there. 44,000 for one list, 75,000 for another. So, how is this list administered? Here's the surprise. According to the government, our government, that claims its highest priority, which is to safeguard our safety, claims that it does not administer or control the list. According to TSA spokesman Mark Hatfield, he said, quote, "The airlines are responsible for identifying passengers who show up on the list. Administration of the list clearly needs to be changed and consolidated to be government managed." Little pause, but would someone explain to me how the airlines ended up in charge of that list? So let's even pretend that's correct. The airlines control who is a security risk? The airlines can't even keep our luggage straight, and they administer a list that determines who gets onto our planes? Jesus, they can't even pass out pretzels, and they're going to determine that? If you don't believe that, guess what? Neither do I. According to the airlines, the TSA determines the list and grants the information to the airlines, who then do the screening based on what they are given by the government. And in a little bit, I'm going to give you a shocking piece of information that will show that the government compiles the list, the airline's job is to screen passengers in accordance with the list, and that's as far as the job goes. But you're going to find out more about what makes this list shocking, I promise. So, why the controversy? The no-fly list at first would be a justified and necessary tool. I mean, who wants people that are threats to our safety in the air on a plane? On 9/11, one of the hijackers was on a watch list but was allowed to board the plane. It makes sense to have this program. So, where has this program gone wrong? The first major clue is in the amount of people that are on the list. You know, think of the math I just shared with you. 44,000 for the no-fly list and 75,000 on the selected watch list comes to close to 120,000 people. And the information on these lists are not complete. Full names, birth dates, ages, physical descriptions are not made available for many of the people listed. So, if Jay Smith was to appear on either one of these lists, every person whose name, which could go from John Smith to Jeremiah Smith, would be pulled aside for questioning. Don't believe me? Well, maybe you know this name, T. Kennedy. The name T. Kennedy is on this list. So it should be no surprise that in 2004, Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts was pulled aside because his name matched that of a suspected terrorist that used the alias T. Kennedy. This again happened with Congressperson Loretta Sanchez, who was pulled aside for questioning because the name Loretta Sanchez appeared on the list, although her birthday did not match the person they were looking for. And this story has been played over and over again in airports across the country by people whose names matched those entered on the list with little or no information past a name. In one instance, the name of Robert Johnson has appeared on this list, keeping men all over the country with this name from flying. The suspected Robert Johnson is reported to be a 62-year-old black man convicted of having bombed a Hindu temple. But that hasn't kept men with the name of Robert Johnson all over the country from being pulled aside. One of these men is actually a member of our military, but he is on that list solely because of a name match. Sadder still are the people whose names match, but for reasons none of us and any of our right minds can even understand, is this treatment that these people receive. If your name matches, they have forced the elderly into searches that are at times both demeaning and embarrassing. They have taken children aside whose names match. Children. And they have forced people to remove articles of clothing in public. All of this done in the name of our security. But where is the danger to us except in the loss of our rights? But I'll touch on that in a few more minutes. If you want to get a good read, and this is numerous, I mean really numerous, I thought about reading some of this to you, but it was just overwhelming. An agency called the Electronic Privacy Information Committee filed a lawsuit against the TSA to get the complaints list of people subjected to the no-fly list and selectee list. By reading this, you will see printouts, PDFs, that are overwhelming in size. And of course, I'll have that up at the research links to podcast number 13 of Indirect Democracy. But what you'll find is a basic conformity of stories, what people were subjected to. And some of it is simple. Some of it gets a lot more detailed on what occurred. And of course, admittedly, there is the occasional nut job that feels the need to joke about terrorism and not being a terrorist, which, just because you're an idiot, I believe should automatically qualify you to ride Greyhound for a while. So, you know, let's be real. I know we all love the joke, and a lot of us believe that freedom of speech should not be infringed at the airport. But come on, these people at the airport have the sense of humor of a pit bull getting its temperature taken rectally. But I encourage you to take the time to look at this list, because this list of people and the complaints, all because of small details that don't match up, aren't even put together to match up, will overwhelm you. So go to that site, look it up. I will have it up on the research page. What has gained the no-fly list its true notoriety has come from its implementation in listing the names of persons that have been or are opposed to the government and the war in Iraq. And the first real question that comes to mind is this a conspiracy? I just mentioned the name of Robert Johnson, who is a member of our military, meeting with hassles due to the TSA. But what about the others we hear about besides Ted Kennedy or Loretta Sanchez? Here's a list of people that have made it on to the no-fly list. Evo Morales, President of Argentina. Nabi Berri, Head of Lebanese Parliament. John Deere, not the tractor guy. A Jesuit priest and member of the Catholic priest group Pax Christi and former Executive Director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. Nancy Odian, a member of the Green Party. Doug Stuber, a leader of the Green Party. Virginia Lauinger, a 74-year-old nun and a member of Peace Action, along with several members of her group who were all stopped at the same time from boarding a flight until met by local authorities. And Lord knows how dangerous nuns can be, especially with a ruler. Oh, Jesus, I just had a Catholic school flashback. You know, I didn't go for very long, but some memories can comfort you to sleep. Others can cry you to sleep. And some just keep you awake with fear, but I'm getting off the subject. Oh, another person on the list, and here's more people. Barbara Olshansky, Assistant Legal Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Nancy Chang, a Senior Litigation Attorney at the CCR. Jesslyn Raddick, a former U.S. Department of Justice Ethics Advisor, who argued that John Walker Lynn, the American Taliban fighter captured in 2001, deserved of all things an attorney. James Moore, the author of Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. United States Representative John Lewis, Democrat of Georgia, widely known for his strong stance on civil rights. James Walter and William Rodriguez, who campaigned for a new independent investigation into the events of 9/11. And my current recent favorite was Randy Rhodes, host of the Randy Rhodes Show, which is found on Air America. And that is just a small sampling of what I discovered. Even more troubling are the people whose names are not on the list. If you're standing, sit down. Listen to this carefully because you won't believe it. One such person that is not on the list is Dawood Salahuddin. His real name is David Belfield and he now lives in Tehran. He carried out the first assassination in Washington, D.C. on behalf of the Ayatollah Khomeini. And he's allowed to fly. Not impressive enough? Try this. The names of the original 11 British subjects recently charged with planning to destroy up to 10 commercial airliners, the ones arrested this past August 2006, and have kept us from bringing liquids onto airplanes. You remember them, right? Their names are not on the list. And here's why. The government has excluded the names of some of the most dangerous terrorists from being on the list. They're not on the list because the government fears that if that information is somehow circulated by airline employees, it will end up in the hands of terrorists. Let me repeat that. The names of people who are actual threats to our safety are not on that list because the government is afraid they might find out. Aren't you feeling safer every day? Because it leaves the very real possibility that we may find out who is not on that list and were able to get onto a plane the hard way. All of this is to keep sensitive information out of the wrong hands. It's a privacy issue. Or so they say. We'll get into that in just a little bit. Naturally, when they were confronted by this, the government claims that it has been working on a program called Secure Flight. It would remove the screening process from the airlines to a database kept by the government. So, maybe in your readings you've read bits and pieces of information about a national database that all airlines, sea carriers, and other forms of mass public carriers will have to turn over their list of passengers for scrutiny by the government. And usually they have to turn in this list some 60 minutes before departure. According to the most recent news story, this is a program that will begin on January 23, 2007. But beyond the obvious hassle people have received and we've been talking about, what rights are being infringed? I just mentioned privacy, and all of these systems are meant to be private to ensure our rights. But not for the right amount of money. According to an article in DealBreaker.com, and I quote, "We hear Deutsche Bank's super souped up security extends beyond the beefy armed guards patrolling the streets outside its headquarters. But yesterday, apparently a consultant who was scheduled to attend a meeting at the bank was denied entry because his name appears on the federal no-fly list. Privacy, my eye. Worse are the rights that we have to travel which are being infringed. Within the Constitution is our right to travel freely within the United States. However, the United States Supreme Court has ruled that due to our various treaties with governments all over the world, the right to travel internationally is also guaranteed." Critics, of course, will argue that in the United States you can still rent a car, but if you have to travel internationally, you do need that boat to get to Japan, Australia, China, Europe, Africa. Or maybe I should be expecting that jetpack I ordered 6 to 8 weeks ago from the back of a comic book. Worse, harder still, are all the hurdles met by people trying to get their names cleared from the no-fly and selectee list. The government created the Office of the Ombudsman to handle complaints and begin a process they claim will take 45 days, but of course they don't let you know why you're on the list. But since I hope you're still listening, here are the procedures they use to redress these issues. The intake process begins with a phone call, email, or letter. Information is taken, including all pertinent information about the traveler, including his or her experience, and the following is read to a person if they are on the no-fly list. Quote, individuals who are on the no-fly list are not issued a boarding pass, nor are they permitted to fly. However, you may have the same name or a similar name or someone whom is on the no-fly list. This may be why you are encountering problems trying to obtain a boarding pass. I review your experience and determine whether you are a candidate for the passenger identity verification form. The personal information requested on the one-page form consists of two parts. The first part includes name, gender, place of birth, etc. The second part requires you to submit notarized copies for at least three of the following documents: passport, driver's license, voter registration card, government identity card, military identity card, military discharge paper, naturalization certificate, and visa. After you gather the information, submit the information to the Office of Intel. The address is written within the initial letter. There, the information is compared against the no-fly list. The individual will then receive a reply from TSA stating either that the TSA has taken appropriate action, which may include notifying the airlines, or TSA does not at this time have information that prohibits the individual from flying. It usually takes approximately a week to 10 days to get a decision from the TSA. Or, if you are on the selectee list, here's what's read to you. Those individuals who are identified on the no-fly list are not permitted to receive a boarding pass. Therefore, if you are issued a boarding pass, you are not on the no-fly list. There are several reasons why persons may be subjected to additional screening. This could include resolving alarms in either the magnetometer or X-ray, random selection of passengers, or being flagged by a computer system known as CAPS, a computer-assisted passenger pre-screening system. CAPS was developed by the airline industry prior to September 11, 2001. The criteria used by CAPS to flag a person are considered sensitive security information and therefore cannot be released to the public. SSSS is one of those initials or a series of S's I mentioned earlier. There are several reasons why persons could have an S on their boarding pass and would be selected for additional screening at either the checkpoint or the gate. Having an S on a boarding pass does not mean that a person is on the no-fly list. The S is placed on the ticket by the airlines and could mean that that person was chosen at random or flagged by a computer system known as CAPS. This system was developed by the airline industry in 1997. While it does not use race, religion, or physical characteristics as criteria, what is used to flag a person is considered sensitive security information and cannot be released to the public. And that is what you'll be told and then be given all the different information of which to try to clear your name. And, of course, I would not be doing my job if I did not give you the contact information on how to clear your name if you are on that list, which, of course, will be up at the research page for Podcast 13. If you are and you would like to, the number in which to use to contact the government for this type of incident is 1-866-289-9673, and the contact email address is tsa-contactcenter@dhs.gov, or you can visit them at www.tsa.gov. But even if the government's claim that they do not have a list based on political affiliations, I mean, even if it is correct, and many of us don't believe that it is their job to ensure our safety in the air. The current TSA list is an example of poor execution and handling when it forces people to feel scrutinized based on the initials in their names or keeps true threats to our safety off the list altogether. As well, to conclude this, if your name does show up on a no-fly list along with contacting the proper government agencies, it is also worth considering contacting an attorney, including members of the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, because as mentioned, these rights to travel are guaranteed, and because these are civil liberties and civil issues, it's proper to contact the right people who can help you with this. Hopefully, together we can start to make a difference in how the TSA's no-fly list is administered throughout the country. And now, here's another ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
The anti-Bush press makes terrorist...
Their interests are not your interests. Their truth is not your truth. The corporations have their media. Now we have ours. The Progressive Podcast Network. Now we are the media. Listen to your media. Take your country back. Go to ProgressivePodcastNetwork.org. The Progressive Podcast Network. ProgressivePodcastNetwork.org.
I almost forgot, but I don't want to not forget. Here is the entire song, Bury the Hatchet, by Bob Mouse. Once again, the name of that song is Bury the Hatchet by Bob Mouse. If you'd like to look into downloading some of his music, you can do so through PodSafe Audio. Or you can go to soundclick.com/Bob Mouse. Or that's BOBMAUS. Or you can go to his MySpace page, which is myspace.com/Bob Mouse, which is BOBMAUS. I do encourage you to go. As you know, I am a big fan of independent artists and encourage you to listen to his music. And if you would like to purchase his entire album, you can contact him via email, which you should be able to find through any one of those sites. So thank you again to him, because I thought it was quite appropriate for the discussion of the no-fly list and our rights, and I thought it was just a great piece of music to share. So before I play our ad for this week's sponsor, today is, of course, the first day of shopping for the Christmas season, and the Christmas shopping season is now upon us, and I would like to encourage you all to consider making donations to the following sites this Christmas season. One, the Salvation Army. 2, the American Red Cross. And lastly, Habitat for Humanity. Each site has now been linked to the homepage for Indirect Democracy at the Favorite Links section. Please give any amount, big or small, to agencies that give back so much to Americans who have nothing. But as I mentioned, it is the Christmas shopping season, and here is an ad from our newest sponsor.
You started before the sun rose, while others faltered.
I can't make it!
You persevered.
Wimp!
When a strong defense got in your way.
Hey! I wanted to buy that PS3!
You overcame adversity.
It'll never bring you the touch of a good woman.
When others questioned your drive.
Hey, that's a handicapped spot.
You steeled your resolve.
I am handicapped. Haven't you seen this loser I'm married to?
You're a Christmas shopper. That's why there's new Yuletide Riptide flavored Gatorade. To help replenish lost fluids and your Christmas spirit. Specially designed for you, the Christmas Warrior. Gatorade and Christmas Spirit. Is it in you?
As always, we end off this podcast with the What a Weenie Award. This week's What a Weenie Award goes to James Carville. If you are not familiar with James Carville, he is a Democratic strategist whose place in American politics was solidified by his role in Bill Clinton's rise to the presidency. He is now a political pundit that gives his opinion on talk shows and is still considered influential in the Democratic ranks. However, James Carville recently called for the resignation of DNC Chair Howard Dean. What made this call for resignation disturbing is that Chairman Dean just oversaw the biggest Democratic victory in the House and Senate for the Dems in over 50 years. He did it through the use of the 50-state plan. This plan called for the Democratic National Committee to spend its money throughout all the 50 states instead of abandoning areas that they felt were too red to the Republicans, such as in Indiana. Thus, trying to build a base for the Democrats in all the states, and not just the battleground ones. The plan worked. Areas that were considered strong Republican regions began to shift, and the Democrats won 30-plus seats in the House. But here's where Carville comes in. Carville called for Dean's resignation because he felt there was money that was not spent by the DNC in the range of $4 to $10 million that possibly could have won the Democrats 20 additional seats. He also called Dean's tactics Rumsfeldian in nature. Big difference. Dean's plan won. Jimmy, seriously, lay off the sour grapes. Dean just did something you haven't done in 6 years. He won. I know you had a great run. You got Bill in, and millions of Americans thank you for giving us a memory of what competent leadership was like. But after your guy was done, what did you do after that? Maybe the magic was in Bill and not you. Where was your magic in 2000, 2002, and 2004? I know there are plenty of people who will say the vote was rigged, but if a large enough block of people were inspired enough by a Democratic message to get out and vote, all the vote tampering in the world could not stop wins for the Democrats in the last 6 years. Your tactics are tired, and old and failed that party. Say what you will about Dean. Maybe the scream is the first thing you think of.
We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House. Yeah!
But Dean had one quality that us grassroots and pissed off progressives wanted. A spine. Jimmy, which part of your team's advice of the Dems cowering in 2002 and also refusing to fight back in 2004 when the Swift voters started their attack? You should have had Kerry on a podium the next day, surrounded by his former unit calling out those lying bastards. Hell, you should have had Kerry come up to the podium on a Swift boat in camis with his crew storming the stage to the soundtrack of Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries, and then call them all a bunch of lying effing bastards. That alone would have had every front page in the country headlining that quote. Good or bad, no one would say Kerry was going to take anyone's crap. Instead, you and others like you said it's okay to go windsurfing and stay quiet for a month. Yeah, Dean yelled. He still gets people riled up. He says things that causes controversy. But he is going to look a right-wing liar in the face and say to them what many of us in the progressive, liberal community are feeling, and he will take the backlash with that great Dean-style apology that evinces someone about to moon you and say, kiss this at the same time. Oh, and about that money? It was a $10 million line of credit. It wasn't even money the Dems had. It was credit. You know, not to snipe too much, but really, I can only imagine that the sex is off the charts crazy with your Republican wife. But trust me, Republican financial tactics in spending money you don't have is financial suicide. Or did you forget your mantra from the 90s? It's the economy, stupid. The Dems have to start building a war chest for 2008, and you can't do that by spending money you don't have. Carville and the whole lot of you that were responsible for the losses in 2000 and 2004, guess what? The party is over. Your time is done. Don't be that guy. You know who I'm talking about. We can all see him in our mind. Don't be that guy. Because that guy is a big weenie. And because you called for the resignation of someone that won, you are too. And that'll be it for this week's episode of Indirect Democracy. I want to thank you all for listening. Of course, if you're listening through WIRN, the World Internet Radio Network, I want to thank you all for listening as well. And if you can, take the time to join the forums and join the community over at the Progressive Podcast Network. I do encourage it. And if you'd like to, please feel free to write me at david@indirectdemocracy.com. I'd love to hear your questions or comments, or even if you'd like to write me with a suggestion for the What a Weenie Award, I'd be glad to read it. So that's about it. And happy holidays to everybody. I know it's the big time has now started. Please be careful out there, and don't put up those decorations too quickly. Take some time to enjoy. But mostly just be sure to take care of each other, and I would be greatly remiss if I did not thank Matt Bloodwell and the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their music, Not Your Enemy, for this podcast. You can get that song through their album, For Crying Out Loud. Their music is available at www.megaphonemusic.net or at their MySpace account at www.myspace.com/megaphone. Once again, want to thank you all for listening. Be sure to take care of each other, take care of yourselves, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.